to follow the money.
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
All right, we made it Friday, baby. Pauly and JJ VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Huge show coming up. Half an hour, we talked to David Baker, professional poker player, sports bettor. He's won contests before, contest strategy, Super Bowl picks, a lot of win totals that he likes coming up. Also, Ryan Kramer in studio, preseason, more futures, NFL slot machine game, hardcore breakdown, how to win. We'll talk to Kramer coming up. A plethora of NFL preseason games, great MLB card, Field of Dreams recap. It's been too long, JJ. How you doing, kid?
Oh, I miss you, buddy. It's a pleasure to be back. And we're going to have a little fun today because you're right. The preseason, the NFL is now back in our lives. I'm very excited for the start of the year. I can't say I'm excited for these games. I mean, anyone who's going to sit there and tell you that they're excited about preseason football is just lying. Like, I worked with Stormy on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
Wonderful. She's a treat. She's a pleasure. She tried to make the case that she gets excited for preseason football, and I don't believe you. But with the subject of preseason football, we're going to do something on this show, Pauly Howard, that John Jastrzemski has never done before. I'm going to bet on a preseason game. Yeah. I haven't decided which one it's going to be. I have a couple of candidates. We'll see if we can align that the first ever preseason JJ special will be a winner.
I cannot believe that. I heard you say that with Stormy. I'm shocked. Shame on you. This isn't Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not asking for you to go out back and smoke crack. I mean, I cannot believe you haven't bet a preseason game before, and I think I can put you on the first game of the night coming up. A quick recap of what transpired last night. All six games went under based on the closing line. Condolences if you had the Raider game over 41.5. It was 24-14 at halftime and couldn't get over there. Two missed field goals, including a 38-yarder. Dogs went 5-0 ATS. Most of the moves were all the moves were wrong. The Charger game went off pick 'em. How about Denver and Atlanta? Denver down to 3.5 on the road. Denver has won 7 straight preseason games. They're averaging 32 points a game in that stretch. The incredible numbers from Mackin and VSiN.com. Going back, straight up winners, 39-1-1 in Denver preseason games going back. The team that wins the game covers. Denver won and not only won 7 in a row, they've covered 7 in a row. Atlanta. Quinn didn't care. Other coaches haven't cared. 5-24-1 straight up run in the preseason. 5-25 ATS. 1-14 ATS at home in the preseason. Good quarterback rotation with Denver. How about after it's my guy Tua? You're looking at Cooper Rush, who they just signed, and Jack Strand, 22-year-old from Bloomer, Wisconsin, undrafted afterthought out of Division II Minnesota State Moorhead. How about the Broncos? Come on, kid.
Yeah, listen, I think that's the case. Now, I don't know if you subscribe to this theory, Pauly. Do you look at these guys that are in quarterback battles? And obviously Atlanta's dealing with that at the moment. Tua is one of those guys that's in a quarterback battle. Do you look at them and say, hey, first half, let's get the guys out there, and then we think about Denver for the full game. You're right about a decent enough rotation. You mentioned the fact that Denver has cared and Peyton has cared far more about these preseason games than Atlanta has, going back to Dan Quinn, going back to Raheem Morris. Now it's Kevin Stefanski as their head coach. The only way I would play this is Denver myself, but is there a case to be made that maybe we should be looking into Atlanta for the first half?
No, I don't want Atlanta first half, no. And I understand your Denver first half concerns. It'd be Denver for the game because it's Stidham and then Sam Ehlinger, and then I'm going against crap with Atlanta. But, you know, we talked about this yesterday. The first half numbers went crazy. Cincinnati got up to 7.5 in the first half, and then I don't know what that was before halftime, going for it near midfield and then allowed Detroit to kick a field goal at the gun and cover the first half. The Jets are laying 6.
But that's what you got to be careful about, Paulie. See, yeah, that's the problem with these preseason games. These coaches don't care. So they're going to look at a situation like you just alluded to, which would be fugazi and would be asinine if they did it in a regular season game. In a preseason game, think about it. They're saying, hey,
yeah,
we want to try this. Let's see if it works. And you end up maybe being on the short end of the stick of a right handicap because the coach is experimenting. Something you got to be aware of with these handicaps.
We saw that last night, and I couldn't believe it. Shanahan is so conservative, it's sick. And I watched the guy punt 4th-and-1 in an NFC title game. He went for it twice inside his own territory with Martinez. McCarthy went for it inside his own 30. And what Taylor did before half also was nonsense. So there was some bizarre moves with some coaching decisions as well. And the Jets, 6 for the game, 5.5 first half against Tampa. Tampa mash unit, no Mayfield, and then Browning got hurt. So they don't have much to work with the quarterback position with Jalen Daniels. And he might go most of the way here. And it comes down to, do you trust Geno and then Klubnik for the Jets as nothing but Jets money, as this was pick 'em 1 and now up to 6 and then 5.5 in the first half in the middle game?
Well, personally, Paulie, to me, it's a Jets or pass spot, because you mentioned the fact that Tampa Bay doesn't care about these preseason games. They're not playing a bunch of their guys. They're dealing with injuries. And I almost believe there's got to be a little bit more of an added sense of urgency for Aaron Glenn and company with how embarrassing last year was as a whole. Don't you get the sense that's the sort of team where preseason might matter a little bit more to them as opposed to some of the other teams around the league where it's like, hey, we got to remember what it feels like to win again. We got to remember what it's like to score a touchdown. We didn't have an interception all year. So he mentioned it. If you followed his comments throughout the week, he was going to play starters. Now, I don't expect the starters to play a whole lot, but you mentioned that quarterback rotation. You'll see Geno, you'll see Klubnik, the Clemson kid. But even if it's like Bailey Zappi, who they brought in, if he's playing the second half of the game, I mean, he's started NFL games before. I think that's why you're seeing a lofty number here, and I know it's a lot of points. I think the Jets are the right side.
Okay. Miami also up to 3.5 against Washington. Dan Quinn hasn't cared about preseason, although Washington dominated the joint practices here, and the Miami offensive line had a tough time against them. You already had the bad news with Tunsil getting hurt, but Miami up to 3.5, and I don't mind Mariota and the Washington rotation with Hartman after him as well. I'm surprised that Miami's up to 3.5, but then again, that's been a bet against Quinn going back. And what you discussed, too, about quarterback battles, this is the perfect recipe and everything you want in the Cleveland Bear game to start the game, start the day on Saturday, where I got Watson going a half, then I have Sanders finding out for the first string and second string quarterbacks to win their jobs, and the Bears, everyone getting hurt. Williams isn't going to play, and it's just try to get through the game if you're the Bears. And Cleveland now 2.5 in the first half in that game, 3 for the game coming up tomorrow. That's everything you want. I mean, if the Bears happen to get it, so be it. But that's everything you want, that it's going to be extended time for Watson, and then you get to see Sanders out there in the third quarter.
Spot situation should be ready-made to order for Cleveland because of what you just hit on. Two quarterbacks that need to play well, that are showcasing themselves in order to be the guy in week one when this season gets going. I do want to work backwards, though, Paulie. You mentioned that Miami-Washington game. I'm curious to get your take on this. Miami has a depleted roster. They have one of the worst rosters in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
However, you have a bunch of guys that might be auditioning for roles that are young, unproven players that maybe have a little bit more at stake in these preseason games. Do you look at Miami laying points and say, hey, young, scrappy guys, they're going to get after it. They're really going to care about this. Or do you look at it the other way and say, hey, their roster has no talent. It doesn't matter how scrappy they may be. I don't have confidence that their second and third string players can do much of anything. And you mentioned that dominance that Washington had with the joint practices. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you're not going to see Jaden Daniels. So it's not like Jaden Daniels is playing much in this preseason game. But what is your kind of read there on how Miami, just with not a whole lot of talent to work with, but obviously a lot of motivation, how you handicap that?
I agree with a couple of things you said. New coach angle, get a win, different roster, different team, lousy season last year, and the new coach angle has been 60% blindly betting that the last 5 years. New quarterback as well, and you're going against a coach who hasn't cared ever in the preseason. So those are points I'm picking up that you were putting down during what you just said. But I'll go along with that too. But I certainly don't want Washington here with Quinn's history and the fact that They don't expect to show much in this one. How about the you want to play the unders again? How about every game going under yesterday? After what happened last year, where it was high scoring and they averaged 45 points a game.
Listen, ain't broke, don't fix it. Miami, Washington reeks of an under.
Yes,
that
it
I
does.
Can tell you.
Yeah.
You want to play an under in that one, that's the one I'd circle.
And the Tampa and the Jets game's got a low total, 34.5 as well. And the Texans went under again. That's a 16-3 under run in that game. I thought Mendoza looked pretty good. I thought Cam Ward struggled. Will Levis did not look good. Rourke looked good for San Francisco before he got hurt. There was a lot of surprises last night with some of the games and what transpired. They couldn't protect Burrow again when he was in there. Luke Altmyer got the backdoor cover going 80 yards on the final drive. Surprised that the Bengals only scored 16 points. So great to have it back, but a lot of surprises, but a lot of trends continued to cash. And that was a 7-point move that winded up being in the Titans game that went from pick to 7, and then it falls 6 after the late 49ers field goal there in a 19-13 final for Tennessee. Win-lose coming up next. Sick beats all over. A moose in the WNBA. A team blew a 28-point lead. What transpired in the Raider game. An awful beat if you had the Colts, and Diaz did it again. How about a team rallied in the ninth inning, and they were 20-1 in play. Win-lose before David Baker coming up on Follow the Money. Beeson, Paulie, and JJ. These Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM, Channel 158.
Win Some, Lose Some is sponsored by the Sharp Plays.
Were you a winner last night?
Wow, winning.
Or was it a rough one?
Well, they can't all be winners, can they?
Loser! You're a loser!
Paulie Howard recaps the night in sports betting in Win Some, Lose Some.
Daily specials, dead heat, most strikeouts, Cavalli and Ashcraft both finished with 10. Cavalli was 12-1, Ashcraft 8-1, and he almost had a no-hitter. Cubs got their first hit in the eighth inning as they were shut out. Pittsburgh wins in a blowout. Ashcraft now 19-5 to the over on the season. Most runs, Pirates 12-1. Highest scoring game, Reds White Sox 15-1. Great call by our guy who was at the game, Field of Dreams. Get involved with the Nola K prop. 9 strikeouts was 6-1. 5 was -130. 6 was plus money. Schwarber, 2 home runs, 25-1. And again, the Twins allow a run in the first inning. What Mike Palm has been talking about. Angels plus 140. Blew out the Rangers again. Brewers 20-1 in play. More on that coming up. Titans pick up to 7. 1-6. Salah 11-3 career in the preseason. Texans 16-3 under run. Raiders over 39.5 up to 41.5. And every game went under based on the closing line. And dogs went 5-0. ATS. Subscribe, be part of the team. VSiN.com, our radio and podcast friends. You always want to see these tweets and videos at Paulie Does Vegas on Instagram. Send them in. We'll put you on. JJ, I say pandas go through life like they got a six-pack in them. I mean, how they survive is beyond me. And here, this guy just rolling around, knocking stuff over, ass over tea kettle. These are just bizarre creatures, how pandas are able to get through life day to day. I don't know how they do it.
I love it. Listen, I've seen my little 15-month-old daughter rumble and bumble and stumbling. Not quite to that extreme, Paulie Howard. That panda, man, getting after it. I love it. And it bounces right back up. I mean, that's the sort of resiliency we're looking for.
That's right. Surprised there isn't a couple concussions there. No doubt. Lose some. Lions, 2-12 straight up run in the preseason. Packers, plus 1.5 to -3. They were awful. The Pittsburgh quarterback rotation was fantastic, and Aller looked good as well. There are the bet on, I think, the rest of the preseason. Bengals, 3.5 up to 7.5. No good. Colts, pick up to 3. Loser. Raiders, -1.5 to -3. Awful job defensively against Arizona. Several bad beats. I mentioned this earlier. Bengals first half. They have the ball near midfield. 10 seconds before half. They go for it on fourth down. It gives the Lions time to run a play, and they kick a field goal to cover the first half. Bengals lane 6.5 or 7. Undrafted rookie Luke Altmyer went 80 yards for the backdoor cover. Raiders, Cardinals over 41.5. 21-14 at the half. Two missed field goals, one from each team. Raiders missed a 38-yard try. Colts money line, minus the points, 1.5 up to 3. Brutal. Minus 4 in the turnover differential. Going up and down the field. 3 turnovers in New England territory, including a fumble at the 1-yard line by Richardson and a fumble by Richardson driving again deep in New England territory as Richardson had 3 turnovers. WNBA, Liberty lane 7.5, up 28 points with 9 minutes left. Won the game by 4. Outscored 40-18 at home in the fourth quarter. I had it. Luke had it. Diaz did it again. For the third time in a week, he blows a save. Dodgers were $1.40. Dodgers and under. It was 4-2 in the ninth. One out, nobody on. 4 straight hits. Milwaukee wins 5-4. And they are still sticking by him, Roberts said today, which I can't believe. Preseason football is here. Sharp money already moving. Here's how they see it. Exclusive data feeds from 4 major books. Thousands of sharp bettors and pro syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves. All of it filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. Every play logged, every result public. Records back to 2011. Live logs since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime. No login. No paywall. The record gets audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com and reaching out to over 500 bettors and sources worldwide across all sports and sending it out to subscribers in real time. They are dynamite. They're the real deal. Sharpplays.com. What'd you think of the Field of Dreams game?
I thought it was absolutely fantastic, Paulie. I'm dying to get there. The Yankees played there in 2021, and I wish that I remembered going into the matchup how much of a hitter's haven it is, because that bettor who had Kyle Schwarber, who, by the way, is like made to play in the Field of Dreams game. Like if you had to take somebody in central casting in baseball, put him in that cornfield and say, go play ball, big fella.
Yeah,
it's Kyle Schwarber. So, of course, he hits 2 home runs, which would have paid very, very nicely. Great night for baseball, a tradition they absolutely have to keep going each and every year, and definitely a lot of FOMO for me because I want to get to the next Field of Dreams, the Yankees play. Now, You mentioned Diaz. Paulie, what are the Dodgers going to do with Diaz?
Come on.
They're paying him a gazillion dollars. The guy is clearly, when he's right, one of the best relievers in all of baseball, but before this injury, he comes back after the injury, he can't get anybody out. Like, I do think they're at a point where, hey, they're comfortable from a standpoint that they're going to win their division. Where they run into trouble, though, Paulie, it's not out of the realm of possibility the Dodgers are in the exact position they were in a year ago.
Bingo.
Where they got to go and play a best of 3. Mm-hmm. And unlike last year when it was Cincinnati and it was basically a first round bye, there was no way in the world Cincinnati had any chance of beating the Dodgers. Could you imagine they got to play like Philadelphia in a best of 3 and you're staring at Sanchez and Wheeler and Lazaro? Like that's a scary first round series for LA.
If the Cubs hang on and they're up 3-0 in the 7th, they'll be a game and a half up on the Cubs. They have the 4th best record in baseball. So they're looking at maybe the 3 seed in the National League. And then, you know, who knows what happens with Milwaukee and the Cubs. Milwaukee up 4 games now with their epic comeback. But this, you're right, to the fact that Atlanta might have a better record. Milwaukee might have a better record. The Cubs are playing great ball. The Phillies had them on the ropes last year. You cannot, this is like C.J. Stroud. Like, what does he have to do to get benched when all the turnovers in the 2 playoff games? What does Diaz have to do to lose his job? That's 3 blown saves in a week. He's killing you.
Yeah, I think they'll give him another week. But then you're going to have to ease him out of that role and then maybe work him back into it. We saw that a lot with the Mets. Paulie, when he would go through funks, you saw it last year with the Yankees with Devin Williams, where they kind of put him in and out of the closer's role. Maybe you give Diaz a blow. You let him work himself right in those low leverage spots. And then maybe by Labor Day, you get him back in the closer's role. Because, hey, you keep flushing games the way they flushed the game, you might be seeing the Phillies or the Cubs or somebody in that wild card series. Scary.
Yeah. You like your Yankees today?
I do, although the Yankee offense is MIA.
Yes.
Much like the Toronto Blue Jays offense, for that matter, is MIA. And, you know, it's funny, Paulie, I went on a Toronto radio station earlier today. They had me on as a guest. And the Blue Jays obviously have a lot of work to do to make the playoffs. They did win 3 out of 4 games against the Red Sox. They're like 2.5 out of a wild card spot. Wouldn't it be wild if Toronto got the last playoff spot, that is 6th seed? They get AL West team 3-6. They win that series. They don't reseed in baseball. They'd play AL Central team. And meanwhile, the Yankees would maybe have to go through the Red Sox in a best of three. Then they have to play Tampa without home field advantage in a best of five. Could you imagine if Toronto was sitting there in the ALCS and it's like, hey, we went 82-80. We were in fourth place. And we're rewarded by playing the Astros and playing the White Sox. I mean, my goodness.
Not bad. I know. This is wide open and no one wants it. This is crazy. Look at Texas. How embarrassing is that? You lose DeGrom. You lose 3 out of 4 against the Angels. Pathetic effort. And Bieber, by the way, has bad numbers career against the Yankees. And Vlad has good numbers against the Yankees. Cole's been outstanding. And the other thing, too. Houston starts this big homestand against Seattle. Seattle's a mess right now and can't hit, and it's Lambert against Kirby. Seattle's won 10 of 11 against Houston, though, going back. So a total of 8 there that Houston figures to get well, but for whatever reason, Seattle this year and last year had their number. 10 and 1's incredible.
Paulie, I smell a rat. I smell a fishy line between the Astros and the Mariners. And when we get to our in-pocket plays a little bit later on in the show, Mr. Jastrzemski may have a play and a best bet on that particular matchup. So remember I said that a little bit later on.
Excellent. David Baker up next. Won the Westgate Super Contest years ago. Great contest player. One of the best poker players in the world. He'll go through a ton of win totals. Super Bowl pick. What his strategy is going to be, what these contest numbers can be as well. He's with JJ on one. He loves a team in the NFC, and he's with me on an AFC team that he likes a lot. We'll go rapid fire with David Baker coming up next on Follow the Money, Visa and the Sports Betting Network. All right, a lot of NFL with David Baker now. Gamble Up podcast, professional poker player, contest winner in the past. He's excellent at AU David B on X. And check out the Gamble Up pod, and also he's involved with Survivor Sweat. And we'll get into that, too, with contest as well. Appreciate the time, my friend. Last year, you had a great run in the WSOP with a bracelet and some deep runs. 4-time bracelet winner. I haven't talked to you. How did this year's WSOP go?
This is one of those break-even years. You know, just like with any contest type tournament or anything like that, I mean, most of your years are going to be kind of break-even or loser. Actually, most of them are probably loser. But when you win, you get paid big multiples, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. So, you know, last year after like four times in my money, this year break-even. Didn't have the best series, but whenever you can break even on a kind of a down year, that's mm-hmm. a big plus. Had a couple of final tables still, and the World Series is alive and well and doing great. The main event took its place back on ESPN, which was really exciting for us in the industry. You kind of grew up watching World Series of Poker on ESPN.
Good point. Yes, well, I loved it, and they did a good job. What do you think of the break once they get down to 9 and taking time off?
Oh, I love it. I think that, you know, this is our marquee event. And I think any opportunity to be able to market yourself or market the players or market the event is just a positive. I think we found a nice little hybrid. It used to be played in the beginning, just straight through, and there was no break at all. And that was cool. But then they decided, hey, let's give these guys an opportunity, guys and gals, an opportunity to market themselves. And we can build some buzz. We can give some storylines and things like that and make it like really exciting. And they moved it to November, which was like a 5-month break. But now I think they found the perfect amount. It's 3 weeks. So it's enough for you to kind of build up some storylines, build up some endorsements, things like that. But at the same time, it doesn't give the players so long that they can completely rework their game and get like extensive coaching. You can kind of touch up some things, but you can't do that. I mean, we look at the documentary that Circa's done on Survivor. Like, how great would it be if we were able to like follow the storylines and then take a break and be able to come back, and then we've all kind of fallen in love with some of the characters and some of the players deep and be able to watch that last week's game. Obviously the football season doesn't work that way, but it would be kind of cool to be able to build storylines and then you have like rooting interests and things.
David, this is the first time we've met. Pleasure to meet you. I see the bio and I see 2020 Super Contest winner. And the jealousy is just oozing out of me. I mean, don't get me wrong. Your poker skills are obviously exquisite. But, like, from my line of work, like, I'd be able to go and have the McGregor walk for the rest of my life if I was able to go and pull that off. So I'm curious to ask you, when was the moment for you throughout that 2020 season where you're like, holy smokes, I'm actually going to go and win this? Was it, like, 8 weeks in? Was it, like, 14 weeks in? When did it, like, really hit you that there was a realistic shot you could do it?
Yeah, thanks for saying that. It was a highlight of my life winning that event. And we came in second, me and my partner, in the Circa contest that same year. So we got second in Circa and first at Westgate. And I grew up, you know, listening to Bill Simmons' podcast. I think that a lot of people in sports kind of did. And he used to always talk about the Westgate Super Contest, and I kind of always viewed it as kind of that amateur versus pro, and I'd love to be an amateur and get in there and compete. It has some parallels to poker where, you know, the skilled players are going to win on the long run, but in the short term, you can easily, you know, get hot. That particular year was the COVID year, and we went, I think it was 19-1 the first quarter and won the quarter. I had some really early thoughts on COVID and how it would affect things. And I just kind of put those into play and really was so far ahead of the field that year. And we got off to such a big start that we kind of coasted in Super Contest, and we had a big run in Circa, and we actually got bad beat on one of the last plays of the game in one of the last games, or we would have won that one too for $1 million. But instead we got 200K for Circa for second. But yeah, it was fun. I think early on we knew that we had something special. And, you know, we won the first quarter at 19-1, didn't even have to chop it. And yeah, just we had like probably a 3-game lead a majority of the season. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was that. And so I'm kind of chasing that. I mean, I love Survivor now, but the millions and the pick contest, that's my baby. That's what I really love. And obviously there's so much more money in Survivor, so we're excited for that. And we do a lot of stuff with that, but, yeah, picking, it's kind of like, you know, you get to test yourself first, the best handicappers in the world. And it's game
an awesome competition.
Too. It's not only just, yeah. I, you know what I love about the contest is it's partly ball knowledge and picking, but partly, game theory. And I mean, anybody can go and just look at the closing lines and say, well, I'm just going to take the teams that have the most closing value and such. You know, you're going to get slightly the best of it. But I don't think that's really the effective way to win it. You want to take advantage of those when it really does align. But when there are opportunities that you can maybe get some line movement against you and you can be on the non-popular side of maybe a line that doesn't matter, or, you know, you can use your ball knower knowledge and, you know, make informed contrarian plays. I think that's the cool part about it is you have to do a little bit of everything. And that particular year we had two games, like, I don't know, probably like week 15, 16 that I really just didn't agree with the line movement. And I knew that it was going to be heavy on the other sides. And we just decided, you know what, we're just going to take these spots. And if we can win these games, then we're going to make up such ground and get like a lead that's going to be hard. And we did. And that kind of like propelled us.
It's such a great point, David, because anytime, and I've been in this contest now, I think each of the last 4 or 5 years, when the splits come out on either, I think it's Saturday, and I see a game that I have as one of my five, and it's like one of the consensus choices, I have a knot in my stomach. I want to be on the other end of it, sure, where like everybody and their mother is taking one side and I'm on the other side with a select few. Do you like locking these plays in very early in the week? Or are you a guy that like waits until the last minute? I mean, obviously injuries play a role. You want to follow the storylines throughout the week, but like, what's your secret sauce for locking in these plays on the earlier side or on the later side?
I mostly go early on Saturday. I know that we'd be beneficial to wait. I do live in Vegas, so you know, it's easy for me to enter them. But I'm just under this paranoia that my phone's going to lock up, the app's going to have an issue, even though we've never had an issue with the circuit. But I'm better safe than sorry. So even though occasionally I might like miss something on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, a lot of times I'm kind of stubborn too. You know, you kind of lock into your picks, and I don't want a knee jerk reaction. It's like, oh, you know, Josh Jacobs, you know, was seen limping off the field after a hit or something. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm off the Packers, or I need to get against the Packers because of this line movement, when most of the time that stuff's not even really that relevant. I mean, backup running backs, you know, they come in all the time. It's not really that big of a deal. Obviously you have the issue with a quarterback potentially happening, but I generally try to get my picks done on Saturday. Occasionally we'll play the Thursday night game. I mean, the Thursday night game is, you can really, if you really, you know, have a good feeling, they're never highly owned. But I want to be very confident in my Saturday plays if I'm going to do that. And also, I do multiple entries, so maybe I'll just do a few with the Thursday night game. I'll very rarely go all in on Thursday, but I do like to go all in on some games on Sundays. I'm very concentrated. I want to have like a lot of multiple entries that have, you know, really good record, or I'm fine to be out of it. I'm not looking to just you know, kind of just spray the board or play both sides or any of that nonsense. I like to get multiple entries with multiple shots. And then, you know, so we are very concentrated, you know, picks.
You were not surprised that the poker players did so well in Grandissimo and in the other Circus Survivor contest?
No, I mean, I'm not really surprised, especially the way that it worked out, where, you know, you had to be ultra contrarian on Thanksgiving. That's something that poker players are willing to do. They're willing to step outside the box and take kind of a plus EV, but, you know, negative risk of actually winning. You know, so that really didn't surprise me. But honestly, I think it's a little overblown. I think just the pure numbers of it, there's just so many poker players that are doing it and they're maxing out the entries that it's just, we're just going to have some that make it to the end. I mean, it's just the law of large numbers, especially because when poker players play, they usually max out. They're not a one bullet group.
A lot of win totals coming up next with David Baker, professional poker player, contest winner as well, Gamble Up Pod. And at AU David B on X, we'll get his thoughts on some win totals straight ahead on Follow the Money next, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Welcome back. 3-0 Cubbies, 2 on, 2 out, bottom of the eighth as they try to finish off the Cardinals. Rapid fire win totals with David Baker, professional poker player on the Progressive guest line. These are correlated. I'm with you. I don't get why the Broncos are the third choice to win the AFC West. How about Broncos over 9.5, Chiefs under 10.5?
Yeah, if you follow any of my content throughout the last few years, you know I'm a very, very big Bo Nix stan and kind of anti-Mahomes. And so these kind of correlated. I think there are a lot of different ways you can play these. I'm definitely totally comfortable playing the Broncos over number. They have the best or one of the best offensive lines in football. They have one of the best defenses in football. They have a quarterback that's ascending and has proven that he is not what the pre-draft analysts thought he was. They have a Hall of Famer coach, and they have more weapons than they did last year. I mean, bringing in Waddle, the early reports are Pat Bryan in camp is a clear number three. He had shown signs last year. So the weapons around Bo Nix are going to be so much better. I think there are a lot of different ways to play this Broncos team. I think another thing, the way that I kind of like the Broncos is I really do feel like they're Super Bowl contenders. I also feel like they are very live to win the AFC West. If you look at that schedule, it's really, really front loaded. The first six games are the gauntlet, and then it really eases up. The number is kind of low right now on Broncos to win Super Bowl. I think you can like probably like 16, 18, maybe even 20 you can find out there. I think it's very realistic that if they can just go 3-3 in those first six, that we are comfortably in play. And the number will probably go up from there. Obviously, they could get off to a great start and just roll off some of these tough wins. But I could see 3-3, and I'm ready to go. When we got the Cardinals, the Chiefs at home, the Panthers, a bye, the Raiders, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, maybe being able to get 25-1 on a team or 30-1 on a team that, you know, many people might say, oh, they regress back. But I think it might just be a product of the schedule if they don't get off to a big start.
Why anti-Kansas City?
I think Kansas City is very fragile. Obviously, we have Mahomes, but he's coming off of an injury. I don't think they were nearly as sharp as they were last year. The skill position, I mean, they brought in Walker, but I mean, really, have we seen that running backs are really that big of a difference maker with teams? I know Barkley was the year that he you know, went to the Eagles, but we're still kind of sketchy on the outside. The weapons for Mahomes aren't that great. I think that you know, kind of just the nature of the NFL, when you're really a dynasty for a while, you're overpaying some of the top end players. And so there's a lot of fragility to the team. I'm not sure if Bieniemy has lost his fastball. I mean, for some reason he hasn't really been good as a coordinator and since he left Kansas City. So I think there are just a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of ways it can go wrong. So I think their high-end outcome is 11, and the total's 10.5 now. So, I mean, I really think that – I think you have a lot of lots you can play with there. Plus, the division's really tough. I mean, I think that they're clearly the third-best team to me. I like the Chargers, and I like the Broncos. So, when you don't have the layups in the division, then I really think it's very tough to get over 10.5 wins.
Great point. Now, let's get to a team that you and I both love. The New Orleans Saints. I can't get enough of the Saints this year. I've bet them to win their division. I have them over wins. I think the division is ready made to order. I think Tampa's in for a long year. I think Carolina is already in a spot where they're dealing with a ton of injuries. And I'm sorry, Atlanta backers. Tua or Michael Penix is your quarterback. That's incredibly problematic. Shuck, Kellen Moore, defense played well down the stretch. David, we're all in the Saints this year. Let's go.
Yeah, I think the Saints might be my favorite play, you know, in that the things we're talking about as far as they're exceeding expectations. I think over 7.5 is really, really nice. I think winning the division, I think you can find plus 250 to probably 300 out there, depending on, you know, where you're doing your work. They have, I mean, Chuck was impressive. I don't think he's going to be elite, but I think he can make that nice year two leap kind of. Maybe not like Bo did, but, you know, similar. And I really like Kellen Moore. You have a lot of transition in Atlanta. There's going to be any time Tua does anything bad, there's going to be calls for Penix and vice versa. They're very fragile in the skill position players. I mean, they do have, you know, three nice weapons, but after that, it's very, very sketchy. And the thing that I think a lot of people are missing on New Orleans is they think about this old offensive line as being weak and an Achilles heel. They're ranked, I think, according to the offensive line guru that I listened to, I think he had him as number 7. So, I mean, even if they're a top 10 offensive line unit with a great coach, a good ascending quarterback, good skill position players in an easy division, I think all signs point up for the Saints.
Okay, David, you know I'm in New York City. I have a lot of Giant fans in my life. They're very excited about Harbaugh. They're very excited about Jackson Dart. You, sir, are not sipping Giant Kool-Aid. Why are you playing the under here at 7.5 wins?
I just think it's a lot to ask with a division that doesn't have any weak teams. I think the Eagles are going to be good. I think the Cowboys are going to be good. And I think the Commanders are going to be decent, at least on par with the Giants. So when I'm taking a team that I'm not entirely sure of, I really want to have like a couple of layups in division, just because, I mean, that comprises a third of your schedule, basically. So I want to go ahead and have some layups. I don't really see any layups there for the Giants. Again, a very fragile team. Dart puts himself in harm's way. Scadabo puts himself in harm's way. Malik coming off of a year-ending injury. There is no secondary receivers on the team. Harbaugh, might he build something there? Yeah, but I don't think he's just going to come in and all of a sudden just be able to turn it around. They do have, you know, very nice weapons on the defensive line. And if Dart can stay healthy, I mean, they can contend and possibly get around that 500 record. But I think there are a lot of ways for them to kind of fail expectations.
How about one more? They looked pathetic last night on offense. I'm not a fan of Salah. They won three games, should have been two if DeMarcado doesn't drop the ball at the one. The Titans in that division are going to win seven games? I don't see it.
Again, another spot where there's no layup in that division. Granted, it's, you know, they don't have like the Bills or the Broncos or Chiefs or things like that in the division, but they do have quality teams above them. And so you have zero layups there. It's really tough to get seven wins with no layups. When I look for teams to back or to be against, I want teams that have a good quarterback, good coach. And I'm not totally buying either of the spots with Tennessee. I'm with you. I think Salah is maybe okay, but I don't think he's good. Cam Ward might turn out okay, but I don't really think he's elite. I'm not looking at him to make that next leap. I just don't really see that they do anything well. They have one of the worst offensive lines in football. I think I saw them rank 31st in preseason rankings. I think this is a transition year for them. And, you know, if they can start making progress near the end of the year, I'm not opposed to thinking that they might look better in the second half of the season. But I think there's a lot that can go wrong. And for a bad team to get to seven wins, it's kind of tough.
2 minutes left. Tell us about your podcast and involvement with Survivor Sweat now that the contests are here hot and heavy.
Yeah, I do Gamble Up podcast on usually later in the week, kind of dissect where I'm thinking about going for the contest, kind of my long view thoughts on the games for the week. I will have an announcement coming out on my Twitter. I will be having a podcast, a separate one that's going to start earlier in the week. And kind of just talk about, you know, first impressions of the week. So be looking on X. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll have that announcement out very soon. I'm still working with Survivor Sweat. If you're coming in town and you need to sign up for the contest, Survivor, Millions, Grandissimo, any of those, go to SurvivorSweat.com and just text them the number. They'll arrange an appointment. You can give them code ODB. They'll give you a discounted rate. We also have a marketplace on the site where you can buy and sell pieces of your entry to Survivor. So if you make it and your entry all of a sudden has 50,000 worth of equity and you want to get out some, then list 10%, you know, take 5,000 profit, gamble for 90. Or if you just want to get out, you know, you're like, hey, I made 50K. That's sure. That's a year's salary for me. I'm going to get out and just sell your entry. So Survivor Sweat offers a lot of nice tools there and the biggest proxy in the contest. So, yeah, go on over to Survivor Sweat.
Well said. Good to talk to you. We'll catch up with you soon, and good luck this year.
Absolutely. Love talking with you guys. Have a great day.
You as well. David
Staker
at AU David B on X, four-time bracelet winner and contest winner as well. Cubs win 3-0 against the Cardinals. 10 NFL games this weekend. How about a team that's on the road that's lost 18 of their last 20 road preseason games? That's next on Follow the Money.